Today, Shir in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Moed Katan Daf Vav. We're learning today Leila Nishmas Herman Stein, Chaim Bereb Avram. All the Nishmas we learn from should have an Aliyah. We begin the Gemara today, four lines from the top, Vav and Aleph. We're repeating the last part of the Brisa that we quoted yesterday, where we had said, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Achihe Shom Zokain, O Talmud. We had said that Rabbi Yehuda had taught us that if you have a field where there was a grave that was potentially lost over there, and now we're not sure was that field plowed or not to make it into a certain type of a field known as a Beis HaPras, one of the three definitions of a Beis HaPras yesterday. So if you heard the hell that you have to go and find either a Zokin, a person that had been around there for a long time, and therefore knows what the history is of that area, or a Talmud Chacham, that would be able to know the affairs of what went on over there and would be able to tell you whether this field was, in fact, a Beis HaPras that had a grave that was lost in it and therefore would be metame tumas ohel potentially, or if it was plowed and therefore it would not be metame tumas ohel. So that's what Yehuda said, and the reason why was Lefi she'ena kol bekiba dover. You need to ask either the Zokin. Sometimes the Zokin could be Zesha kon Chochma, so it would be a person that's a knowledgeable older person, or even a younger person, a young Talmud Chacham, because not everybody knows the halachic status of these fields, but these people, a Zokin or a Talmud Chacham, would know this. So Abaye makes a side comment on this, and he says, Abaye, Shmami, no, you see from this statement of Rabbi Yehuda, that Sorvim Rabbanu, the young Talmud Chacham, the Ikub Masa, if he's in the city, call Mila de Masa Ale Ramya. He would know whatever's going on in the city in terms of spiritual matters. As Rashi points out, call Mila de Masa Ale Ramya, the Talmud Bakihu. He's a Talmud Chacham who's an expert, and therefore, when there would be matters of the city, Mistama, he would be the one that would know what's going on. So go and ask them. That's always the best Eitzah. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, the Amor Rabbi Yehuda, that was previously the Tana Rabbi Yehuda. Now we have the Amor Rabbi Yehuda who said, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Motzo Eben Mitzuyenis. If a person sees a stone, now this is an elevated area, stone is elevated, and he sees that it is Mitzuyenis, as Rashi points out, Besid. So it has lime on it, so therefore that's a marker, as we discussed in the Mishnah, that they would go out at certain times and be mitzayenes hakvarim. They would mark off areas so people wouldn't be metame by accident their taharos, their trumus umaisus, or their kachim, their taharos. So if you find such a stone, now the stone is elevated, and therefore you see it from far away, and therefore you're not going to just chance upon it. That's why we said previously that if it's on a flat terrain, so then you put the marker a little bit distance from the area of the tumah, so a person will see the marker, will chance upon the marker, and they'll know, oh, a little bit more distant from here, right nearby, that's where the tumah is, and you can be careful. But a stone is elevated, so if you find matzo evi mitzuyenes, you don't have to assume that nearby there is tumah. You can say right underneath here, tachteha, right underneath where the stone is, that's where the tumah is. That's why they put this marker over here, tumah. If you find two such stones, stayim, so they're not right next to each other, there's a space in between them, so it depends. Im yesh sid beneihem, if you have some of the sid, the lime, also in between the two stones, it's on top of the stones, and also in between the two stones, that's a clear demonstration, that's a clear demarcation, that in between the two stones, beneihem tameh. That's where the grave was, and they put those two stones at the head and at the foot of the grave. Then ain sid beneihem, if you just had the two stones, but there's no lime in between them, then you can assume it's two separate areas that were demarcated, and the area in between them is beneihem, is tar. So underneath stone number one, that's tameh. Underneath stone number two, that's tameh. But in between them, there is no kever, and therefore there is no tumah between them. And the Gemara questions this and says, really? Even though that area is not plowed in between these two stones, you can just assume that there's no grave over there. But we learn differently in another Brisa of Otanya. The other Brisa said, if you find Motzo Eben Achas Mitzuyenes Tachteha Tomei. Like we just said, this Brisa is in agreement with that. That if you find just one stone, so then underneath this one stone, it's Tomei, but everything around it is Tar. But if you find two stones separated from each other, Shtayim, so then Im yesh choresh b'neihem, only if the area between them has been plowed, then can you say that b'neihem is tar, that there's no dead body in between the two stones that would be matame that area. Only then, if the area between them was plowed, can you say that there's no tum over there. If there had been a body there, it would have been moved and plowed through, and therefore there wouldn't be any tumas ohel. So only im yesh choresh b'neihem tar. But im lav, if there is no charisha between them, then you have to assume that the b'neihem is tame. So here it says in between the two, it is tame if there's no plowing. And the previous price it said in between the two, regardless of whether there's plowing or not, it's tar. So we seem to have a steer between the two prices. So I'm a Rapapa reconciles him and says no. The prices are talking about two different situations. Ha ha. in the Braisa that we just learned, the second Braisa where it said that you had to have plowing in order for it to be considered tar, that's because there was a little bit of sid in between the two. Kisha sid shafuch al roshehem omerude lekan ulekan. There was sid on top of the stones, and then there was a little bit of sid in between the two. And therefore, if this plowing, i'ika choresh beinehan beinehem tar, you're able to say that the area in between them is tar if there's plowing there, because during the plowing, the aim where you could say during the plowing, machmas choreshu. Now the gears that we have is the ikval, but it says on the side that it should be in the bach. It says that it should be the iklaf, that it was the plowing that made some of that lime go off the stones during the plowing and go in between them. So the lime that you have that's a little bit in between the two stones, if it's plowed, you can say it's not that there was tumma over there, but you can say that it's due to the plowing. But v'lo, if there was no plowing between them and there's a little bit of lime there, then you have to assume that it's tummy. V'lo, sid, the baini, who, the tummy. So then that little bit of sid that's there, it can't be assumed that it just fell off from the stones during plowing. There was no plowing. And that's why the second Braisa says that you have to be concerned about tumma between the two of them, because there's a little bit of sid in between them. But the first Braisa, where there was no sid in between them, there's no sid in between them, then whether it's plowed or not, you can assume that the area is tar. Another statement, Omer Ravasi. Ravasi said, Meitzar Echod Mitzuyon, if you have the boundary to a field. They used to separate and demarcate the Reuven's field from Shimon's field by having a slightly raised border. They would put rocks or something that was slightly elevated in between the two fields, so they would know the left is Reuven and the right is Shimon's field. So when you have these Meitzar, these boundaries, so Meitzar, Echod, Mitzuyon. Now, one of the borders over here of this field, right, the four borders on each field, so one of the borders on the field has lime on the rocks around it. So underneath that border, you assume there's Tumma, Hu Tame. However, Holosad, the cooler Torah, but the rest of the field, there is no reason to suspect that it's going to be Tameh, because after all, how much of that field would be Tameh? Until where would it go? So if you needed to demarcate that field, you'd have to demarcate it with lime in other areas as well to show you the exact area that was considered to be Tameh. So if you only have one border, as we'll see, same thing as with two and three borders, if you only have some of the borders that are Tameh, not all of the borders that are clearly demarcated as being Tameh, so then you can assume just underneath that border it's Tameh. That's where the person was buried, that's where the body is, and therefore every other place is not Tameh. So if there's one border that's Tameh, only underneath that border, same thing with Shnayim, you can assume that underneath those two borders, Heim Tmeim, V'chol HaSod HaKulu Torah, but the rest of the field is Torah, and likewise with Shli, Shosha, Heim Tmeim, V'chol HaSod HaKulu Torah. One, two, or three of the borders are limed, they're demarcated, so then only under those three, because how would you know where it extends in the other direction? So even if three of them are, so you could say, wow, that must be enclosing an area. No, but you don't know how far it extends. So therefore, if either one, two, or three of the borders are demarcated with lime, so only under those borders is it going to be Tameh. However, if all four borders are demarcated with lime, Arba, then paradoxically somewhat, underneath those are going to be Tahar. However, Hain Taharin, but V'chol HaSod HaKulu Tmeah, the area that they enclose, you have to presume that that has dead bodies in it, and therefore that entire area is suspect for Tumas Meis and Tumas Ohel, and you can't carry Taharos in that area. If you do, they would become Tameh. And this is based upon the Yom Amar, Ein Marchikin Tzion Mimokom Tuma Shalol Lahavsit Es Eretz Yisrael. In this situation, you presume that they limited the demarcated areas to only the exact area that's necessary, because if you pushed it further away, so then you'd be carving out chunks of Eretz Yisrael that aren't really Tameh, but you can't go there because of the demarcation. So therefore, the demarcation is right at the border where the Tuma starts, and therefore all four of the borders are demarcated with the lime, so then the area in between them is tar, is Tameh, but the area underneath them and certainly everything outside them is tar. Then we quote the Mishnah. The Mitzvah said, the Yotzen ala Kilayim, the basin sends out Shluchim during Chol HaMoed to go and check to see if there's Kilayim and to go and uproot the Kilayim. So we ask now, really, on Chol HaMoed, that's when they sent them out, implying that they, B'dafka, sent them out on Chol HaMoed, B'akilayim, B'chol HaShomoed, Navkinan? That's not true. We learned in a Mishnah that we had previously in Shkolim, that it wasn't on the days of Chol HaMoed They sent it a month before, on the 15th day of Adar, as the Mishnah taught us. It said in the Mishnah, on the first day of Adar, they would go and announce the people, the new fiscal year is coming, so you better start giving your matzahs a shekel. So into the month of Adar, that's why we have Parsha Shkalim. So they would go and send out announcements, start bringing in your funds for next year's fiscal year for the Matzah the Shekel funds. And likewise, they told people, listen, now the plants are starting to grow, check your fields for Kilayim. But the Beis Din didn't do anything. They just sent out messengers announcing this. They would announce, Mashmin al-Shkom al-Kilayim. But then, B'chamisha sorbo kormis ha-Megillah b'krachim, in the walled cities, they would read the Megillah on Tesvav, on the 15th day of Adar. Tosus says, why didn't they say on the 14th day of Adar? They read it in the non-walled cities. So Tosus says, Havimotzi lemasne b'yadalid bo, in the cities that aren't walled, it should have said b'shara yaros, not like Kfarim that Tosus has over here in the Ramasko, the Tesvav. In any event, he says the reason why he says Tesvav is elamishum the Tesvav, zman the dvarim acherim. Since we want to mention Tesvav specifically, we're not interested in just repeating the entire Mishnah, so therefore, it's going to tell us the other things that happened on Tesvav, so that's why it mentions Tesvav will be it. So B'chamisha Asar, what did they do? Obviously, according to Samagillah B'krachim, in the walled cities, they would go and read the Megillah, and also on Tesvav, the Yotzim, they would send out the Shluchim, like we had said previously, L'kadetzis Adrochim, that we said was to remove the thorns and the thistles, the stumbling blocks that are in the road. Again, we said Basin is accountable. If Rachmon Lusan, somebody can't escape from robbers because the roads aren't clear, or they trip over something, then Basin is held to be accountable. See, if a Basin has a responsibility to go and clear the roads, Ulasakein or Rehovos, and to go and fix up all the different thoroughfares, and we said the Stratios, the marketplaces, so that people shouldn't have stumbling blocks and hurt themselves. Likewise, the Lomud HaMikvos, Basin would send out people to go measure the mikvos. They had to make sure that they still had 40 saw. Sometimes they would dry up over the season, and now they had to go measure them to make sure that they were truly filled up. They had the proper 40 saw, and if not, they would go and bring in a halachically acceptable way water to make them kosher mikvos. So Basin sent out the shluchim on the 15th day of Adar to correct this as well. And we said, Va'osim kol tzorchei rabim, they would take care of all the other public needs, which we discussed the other day, was they would dig wells if they needed to dig additional wells for water for Aliyas HaRegel. And Mitzayin and Esakvaros, they would go mark off the Kvaros. Sometimes during the rainy season, the lime would be washed away, so they would go and clearly demarcate where the Kvaros was. And here's the point that we're bringing in this Mishnah. It says, V'yotzin alakilayim. And they would go and send out the shluchim, the messengers of the Beis Din, to go and uproot the kilayim. So clearly it's Tezvav and Adar, and not during Chol HaMoed Pesach a month later. So how come there seems to be a stira between our Mishnah and the Mishnah in Shkolim? So the Gemara says, no. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, Bechanina, they each give a teretz. They're very similar to roots, and we don't know which one said which. Chad Amar, one of the two, either Rabbi Elazar or Rabbi Yossi Bechanina, he said, Kan b'bochir, kan b'ofil. Bochir means the early crops. As Rashi points out, al habechiros, on the early crops, the first crops to, that's like a bechor, the first crops to come out, they would send out the shluchim to go and uproot the kilayim, yotzim b'tesvav b'adar. And al huafelos, those are the later crops that grow, b'cholo shomoy, the Pesach. They would send them out for cholomoyd Pesach. So it's talking about the same types of crops, but some of them grew earlier and some of them grew later, so they would have to send out at two separate times. That's the first teretz. The second teretz is very similar. Instead of saying the same crop, early crops versus the later crops, the second teretz is a chadamar, kan b'z Bizroyim. Here we're talking about sending out the shluchim on Tezvav Adar, so that's Bizroyim. Those are for certain types of seeds, certain types of grains, such as Atfua, they would send out on Tezvav in Adar, and they would sprout before the Yirokos, and Kan B'Yirokos, when they send them out on Chol HaMoed Pesach a month later, that was for the vegetables. So for the grain, the Zroyim, the seeds, they would send those shluchim out to uproot them earlier because they would grow faster. And for the vegetables, which took a longer time to grow, they sent them out only in Chol HaMoed Pesach. Okay. Moritz says, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan, Lo Shanu, that which we said, they sent out the shluchim either on Tezvav Ador and on Chol HaMoed Pesach, that was only Elosh'ein Nitzon Nikar. That's only when the Nitzonim, the growths, the buds, the sprouts, were not recognizable earlier, right? In Camp Morasha, the youngest division is called the Nitzonim division, the sprouts, the budding children. So the growths over here, if they're not recognizable, then we assume that they'll start to become recognizable around Tezvav Adar and Chol HaMoed for the different types of crops, or for the early crops versus the later crops. But if they're earlier recognizable, Avon Nitzon Nikar, then if you can see already before Tezvav Adar that the growths are starting to come up, Yotzin Aleihem, then the Shluchim of Beis will go out earlier to go and uproot the Kilayim. Then the Gemara asks, "Ma'ishno b'chol shomayid denavkinu? Why b'dafka did they send them out on Chol HaMoed? What's special about Chol HaMoed? Send them out the week before Chol HaMoed. Send them out the week after Chol HaMoed. Why b'dafka on Chol HaMoed did they send them out?" So I'm Rav Yaakov, I'm Rav Yochanan. He says it's a financial issue. Rav Yaakov, the name of Yochanan, says mishum schar peula demozle gabon. He says, you know why? Because people aren't allowed to work during Chol HaMoed. So there's a plentiful labor pool of people that may need money, and they need money to purchase stuff for Yontif, so they'll be allowed to work, and since they're not doing other jobs, there aren't a lot of other jobs available, you're not going to have to pay them as much, and therefore it's good from Basin's point of view, since Basin has to pay them, that you're using a lower wage employee. So Amar Rav Zvid, Vitamar Rav Masharsha, so Rav Zvid or Amar Rav Masharsha said, based upon this, you see that Basin is responsible to pay, the Trumas HaLishka is responsible to pay for sending out the Shluchim to go and uproot the Kilayim. Shema Mina, you see from here, Ki Yavinan Lehu Schar, Mitrumas HaLishka Yavinan Lehu. Then they're getting paid for this work, they're getting paid from the funds of the Beis HaMikdash, the federal government, the Beis HaMikdash, is obligated to go and pay for these shluchim, and not, you might have thought, the person who they're uprooting his kilayim, he should have to pay a fine and have to pay for it. No, it's paid for by the Trumas HaLishka, and if the Trumas HaLishka is paying for it, therefore we want to get the cheapest labor possible. So how did Rav Zvid or Rav Masharsha say you can see this from here? Because the Soka Daitoch Mididhu Yavin Elohu. If we were to say that, no, that Beis Din doesn't pay them, but when they go out and they uproot the Kilayim, so they charge a fee, or they fine the people that had the Kilayim, and therefore they'll pay for the services of the Shluchim, no. Because if you were to think that, then, my navkalon minayu, kol kama debo litenlo. If that were the case, then why would we specifically look for cheap labor? Why would we specifically say, do this on Chol HaMoed, do it at any time, and if they're charging $100 an hour, they'll charge $100 an hour, and that's what they'll uproot, and make the person whose field they uprooted from pay $100. And if it was $50, it would be $50 an hour. We wouldn't care. Basin wouldn't specifically look to go get cheap labor, because they're not the ones that are paying for it. From the fact that Badafka, they do this during Chol HaMoed, Mishum Schar Pa'ula, the Mosley Gabon, because the wages are going to be less, so clearly you see that the Trumas HaLishka pays for it, and therefore we try to make sure that the Trumas HaLishka funds are maintained and aren't used up wantonly, and therefore we try to get less expensive labor. That's why we do it during Chol HaMoed. This is a very sharp interpretation of here, a Rav Zvid or Rav Masharsha, based upon our Mishnah. Okay. Then the Gemara says, V'yad kama, how much does that have to grow in order to be kilayim? If you have one seed over there, is that called that you have to uproot the entire field, or even that one seed? So Gemara says, I'm Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak, no. Ke'osa shishanino, it's like that which we learned already previously in kilayim, that there's a 1 to 24 ratio. Kol saw, a saw is 6 kav, and each kav has 4 parts to it. So you have a rova kav. So there are 4 quarters to a kav, and there are 6 kav to a saw. So if you have a saw's worth, which is 24 rova kavs, and we turn to vav over days, then rova zera mimin acher. If you have 1 quarter of a kav, a rova of a zera mimin acher, so 1/24 of the field, you might. Then you have to go and reduce it. Now you might, Rashi tells us over here, means she'im zora rova hakav. If you planted a rova hakav's worth, yimatenu v'yakrenu. You have to go and make it less than 1/24, to make it a smaller amount than 1/24, and uproot that amount. Others suggest that if you find that amount, then you have to uproot the entire amount, not just to get it less than 1/24, but then you have to uproot all of the kilayim that are there. In any event, that's the shear that's defined as being significant amount of kilayim. Adimur says, Votanya, but we learned in another brisa, Hiskinu Shiu Mafkirin Kolaso Dekula. Whoa. The other brisa tells us that Chazal said that you have to go and not only uproot the kilayim, but if you find this, you penalize the person and say his entire field is hefker, and anybody can come and just take whatever they want. So that's a lot more than just uprooting the kilayim. So you seem to have a stira between this 1/24th ratio and you just uproot that, or you uproot all of the kilayim, but you don't make the whole hill for hefker. And then the other brides that it says, call a sada kula. The entire field is considered mafkirin. They make it hefker as a punishment, a knas to this person. So what says, lokasha, it depends. Kan kodum takona, kan li'acha takona. One, the brides that it says, you just have to uproot to get it less than 1/24, or you don't have to be concerned about once you get it to less than 1/24, that is before the takana. What takana we'll see in a second. And the other one that says, demafkir kol asada kula, so that's after the takana. Now what was this takana? So this is a famous takana that we learned previously, and we see it again now here in the Braisa, the Tanya. Because the Braisa says, barishona, when originally the Bezin sent out the shluchim, let's say on Tezvav Ador, to uproot the kilayim, hayokrin, they would go and uproot the kilayim that they found in the field. And what did they do with the kilayim? Mashlichin lefnei behemtam, and they would throw it in front of the owner's animals. So guess what? The owners were thrilled. Doubly. They said, Oyu bali batim smechim shtei smachos. The owners had a double simcha over here. Number one, achas, somebody else was doing the work for them. Somebody else was weeding their fields from getting rid of the kilayim. Shemanachshin lehem sedosein. So they were happy they got free labor. Somebody was weeding their kilayim out of their field. They didn't want it there. They had a vineyard and they didn't want the vegetables or the grain to grow there. And somebody was uprooting it. And not only that, once they uprooted it, they fed their animals. So they said, whoa, let the kilayim grow. It's great. We get free labor, and they feed our animals at the same time. So the rabbis were masake in hiskinu, shu okrin, that they would go and uproot the kilayim, but they wouldn't go and feed their animals. They just threw them on the road, so they wouldn't get the benefit of having their animals fed. No, okay, so their animals weren't fed, but they still got free labor to go and weed them. So still, but the owners of the kilayim, of these fields, were still happy because they had free labor to go and uproot their kilayim. So, didn't do anything about it. They were very happy. So therefore, since Shemanashkin Siloseim, they didn't try not to have kilayim because somebody else would uproot it if there was. So therefore, the rabbis came along and made another takana that, okay, if you're not going to be careful, if you're going to be negligent and have kilayim grow in your fields, if we find that we're going to be mafkir entire field, so iskinu shu mafkir and kol asada kula, and this way, the people would say, uh-oh, this isn't such a good thing anymore. Nobody's weeding our fields for free and feeding our animals. In fact, what they're doing is they're mafkir our fields if they find kilayim over there. We better be more careful when we plant. We better be more careful ourselves to uproot the kilayim. Otherwise, we're going to have a financial loss over here. Our fields are going to be made hefker. And that's something, therefore, that's after the takana. They were much more careful to make sure that the fields didn't have kilayim, which was the whole purpose of the Beis Din's decree. Now we go to the next Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, Moshchin asamayin me ilan ilan. You're allowed to go and draw water from one tree to another tree in a field on Chol HaMoed, but you're not allowed to go and water the entire field. You can't water the entire field. That's the first statement that he made. Second statement that he made was, Zroyim shloshosu lifnei ha-moed lo yashkeim ba-moed. If you didn't start watering the plants that are growing in this field before Chol HaMoed, so obviously they don't need the water that desperately, so then you're not allowed to start going and watering them lo yashkeim ba-moed. You can't go and start watering them on Chol HaMoed. However, the Chachamim disagree with both of these statements. The first statement that you can't irrigate the entire field that has the stei ha-ilan. And number two, that if you didn't start watering them before and you can't start watering them Chol HaMoed, the Chacham Matir and Bezeh Bezeh. The Chacham say, no, both of these are acceptable. You're allowed to do both of these things. Who are these Chacham? Rashi tells us, V'hai Chacham, Hai Rav Meir. This is Rav Meir that we had on Daf Beis, the first Mishnah in the Masechta, where it said, Mashke Mimenu Afilu Soda Beis Habal. He said, you're allowed to irrigate even a field that only normally gets rainwater. Rav Meir's opinion is that you can irrigate such a field. These are the Chacham over here that say, there's no problem with irrigating the entire stei ha'ilan over here, and there's no problem even in irrigating a field that hadn't previously been irrigated before Chol HaMoed. You can start irrigating it on Chol HaMoed. Where it says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, im haisa sode mitunenes mutter. Rabbi Yehuda says that even Rabbi Elazar and Yaakov would agree that if the field was mitunenes, in other words, it had water flowing into this field previously, there were some underground springs, there was water in this field, it was mitunenes, it was very, very wet, it was a wet field, and now it suddenly dried up. So even though you hadn't watered it yourself beforehand, you would be allowed to water it now on Chol HaMoed for the first time. As Rashi says, Abel, im haiso sode mitunenes, which means lecha, it was moist, and then it dried up. The field that was being irrigated here by some underground streams or whatever it was, now stopped, mutul ashkosa, you will be allowed to go and irrigate this field. Afal gav, the havisod de beis habal, even though it's a field that normally doesn't get irrigation, but it had underground irrigation over here on its own, the kiv the havilecha ad hashna, since it was very moist until now, if you don't continue to go and irrigate this field, ilomashkela, had they pseido yisera, this would be hefsim aruba, and therefore it is allowed to be done even on holomoid. That's what the Amora reviewed the set, and Tani Nami Hochri Vibrice it says the same thing. Kisha Amru, when the rabbi said, Osulash Gosim Mamoe, did you not let it go and irrigate such a field on Cholamoid? They only said it, Lo Amru, Ela Bizroim Shaloshosu Bithiamoid. They said this only if it's for the first time being irrigated on Cholamoid, then you can't go and irrigate it. But if it had been irrigated before Cholamoid, Avol Zroim Shaloshosu Bithiamoid, Mutulash Gosim Mamoe, then even Rez and Yaakov had said you're allowed to go and irrigate them if they've been previously irrigated beforehand, now you're allowed to go and irrigate them still on Cholamoid because there'll be a Hefsid Beruba. They're used to having this water. If you don't have it, they're going to die. And therefore, you're allowed to go and water it even on Cholamoid. And furthermore, Im Haysa saw the Mutunenes, this is exactly what Rav Yehuda said. The Brisa supports exactly what he said. If this field was a moist field, it had some underground springs, and now they dried up, so now Mutter, even on Cholamoid, to go and for the first time go and irrigate this field because the field was used to having the water and it would be a Hefsid Yisera, a Hefsid Meruba, as Rashi just said, if you didn't go and irrigate this field on Cholamoid. The Brisa continues and says, Vein Mashkin saw the Gorid Bamoid. Others have the Girsa Gorir, if you look in the top Tosos. So you're not allowed to go and irrigate such a field that is a dry field, a sode grid. Rashi explains over here in Dibra Maskel. Sode grid, we're dealing yovsha meolam. It's always a dry field. It doesn't normally get a lot of water. Shein sarach lashkosa, and you don't have to go and irrigate such a field. It's able to grow. It's very fertile, but it's just a dry field. The top Tosos says this is a beis habal. This is a field that's normally not irrigated. It just gets rainwater. Lefi shahaya rog yolios yavish, and it's used to not having a lot of rain. And he says that the word gorid should be with a dalid, gorid, and this is also a perush of the Aruch that it should be with a dalid. However, he brings down in Tosos, Harav, he says, Beresh, it should be Gorir, Kamo Chamra Migrar Gorir. So, in any event, whatever the word is, it means a dried up field. So, if it's a dried up field, the Braisa says that you're not allowed to go and be Mashka that on Cholamoy, but nevertheless, the Chachamim say in both of these situations, you're allowed to go Bezeh, Bezeh, you're allowed to go and water the field. Here, the Bezeh, Bezeh, Rashi tells us, means Besod the grid, this dried up field. Or even if you didn't water it before Cholamoid in another type of a field, you'd be allowed to go and water it now for the first time on Cholamoid. Now, that's what the Braisa said in support exactly what the Amora Rav Yehuda said. Amar Ravina, Ravina says furthermore, he says, Shema Mina, you see from this Braisa, Hai Tarbitza. What is a Tarbitza? Rashi says it's a Gina. And the Rashi Ksiviyad adds that he says it's a garden, a Gina, show your Rokos. That's the first interpretation. Lishnachrina, in the Rashi Ksiviyad, in the first of the wide lines at the bottom, so he says, another interpretation is, Noagin hoyu lahashko soda li achak tzira miyad v'neshiotsum bo yirokos. If they would go and harvest the field, there would still be some growths in the field, so they would go water them to allow those growths, those vegetables, to grow better. Ukishamashkin oson maros lotzeis oson yirokos. Those vegetables would then grow much faster. So anyway, this is this tarbitza, this gina, that would be a vegetable patch of some sort. So this tarbitza, high tarbitza, Ravina tells us, share, one is permitted, litarbutze. Litarbutze is a lashon of irrigating as well. The Sivriad Rashi's in the second line, Marbitzin, tells us, hainu hashka Porta. This is a lesser amount of irrigation than the normal irrigation, lahashkos, that we would use if we use the term lahashkos to water the field. So it's hashka porta, a lesser amount, but the purpose would be here, kadesha yotsua yirakos. This is good for these yirakos, they don't need as much. So Ravina tells us that if you have these vegetable patches over here, share letarbutze, you're allowed to water it with a lesser amount of water than it would be called hashka, becholo demayard. That you'd be allowed to do this on Cholamoid. Now, how did he see this from the Braisa? He said, Shmami, no, you see this from the Braisa, because he said, if you have a stay gorid, if you have this dried up field, how come the Chacham said that you're allowed to go and water it? My taima, because the afla mishavi lo harfa, because these late coming crops, the afla, if you go and water it, will come up earlier. And therefore, that, even though it's not a hefsid meruba, is considered an acceptable type of avoda. on Chol HaMoed by the Chachamim. So Hochanami, so too, this tarbitza, this vegetable patch, afla, it would normally grow later, mashli lo harfa, it would allow it to grow earlier, and therefore, just like the Sdei Gorid, you're allowed to do this, so the vegetable patch, this tarbitza, has the same halacha as the Sdei Gorid. And if the Brisa says you can do it for a Sdei Gorid, you can also do it for a tarbitza. Tanur Rabbanan, we learned another Brisa, marbitzin stay loven by shvius. And you're allowed to go and do this hashkoa purta, this marbitzin, on a stay loven. A stay loven, we said previously, is a grain field as opposed to stay or ilan. So a stay loven is a grain field. You're allowed to go and water it during the shmita year, bashvias. However, not on Chol HaMoed, avalo b'moed. You can't do this on Chol HaMoed. So this is Brisa says there's a difference between the shmita year and Chol HaMoed. I, the Gemara says, well, Tanya, and other Brisa said that you can do this both on Chol HaMoed and Shvius. Mar bitzin ben b'moed ben b'shvius. You can do this on Chol HaMoed or on the Shemitah year. So the two Brises are contradictory. Okay, for Shemitah, they both agree you're allowed to water it. But on Chol HaMoed, the first Brisa said you can't do it on Chol HaMoed. The second Brisa says you can do it on Chol HaMoed. What's the difference? So I'm Ravuna, you reconcile them as follows. Lokash, it's not a problem. The two different opinions. The first Brisa, it says, you're not allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed. That's the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov that we just learned in the Mishnah. And the second opinion, the second Brisa that says you can do it, Bein on Chol HaMoed, Bein on Shemitah year, HaShviyas, HaRabbanan. That's the opinion of the Rabbanan that said, Bein Zeh, you're allowed to do it, Bazeh, Bazeh, you're allowed to do this. So it's very simple. The two Brises are two different opinions. Tanyidach, we learned in another Brisa, Marbitzin, you're allowed to water this stelov in this grain field on Erev Shviyas, the year before the Shemitah year, even though it's going to allow the vegetables to grow in the Shemitah year. Kidei she'etzu yirokos b'shvius, even though the reason why you're watering in the sixth year is really to benefit the seventh year crops. So normally you're not allowed to do certain things, but here Rashi brings down that kidei she'etzu yirokos v'ochlon b'shvius, you can eat them in the seventh year, azman abir, until the end of the time when you have to go and, quote, do the beer on the vegetables. The beer on the vegetables in the Shemitah year is either an actual destroying of the vegetables, but most say no, it means you just take them out of your house and you bring them outside of your house and anybody can take them, so that's called the beer process. In any event, they would water these fields in the sixth year in order that there should be better crops in the seventh year, and that's Rashi Ksiviyat says, ain't no avodos karko b'shvias. Since they're not doing anything in the Shemitah year, they're doing it in the sixth year, that is allowed. And the previous either din daraisa that you're not allowed to do harisha or zriya during the month of Elul, and then we had the additional dinim from Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, maybe you can't do it for certain fields even up beyond Pesach or beyond Shavuos, so that doesn't apply over here. This watering isn't a concern. And furthermore, the Gemara says, the Brisa says, Elo shemar bitzin stay love and b'shvias. The way that we have this Brisa, it tells us that you're allowed to go and do this marbitzin to water the field even in the Shemitah year. And kidei she'etzu yirokos l'motzei shvius. So you can water it in the Shemitah year, so you'll have crops she'etzu yirokos l'motzei shvius. So the crops will grow in the eighth year. Now, Rashi, in the regular Rashis, says, avol lo yashke b'shvius kidei she'etzu b'shvius. You wouldn't be allowed to go and water it in the seventh year, so that you'll have crops in the seventh year. It's only you're watering in the seventh year that's allowed, because it's not for the seventh year, it's for the eighth year. And that's why Rashi says it's allowed. But Rashi in the Ksiv Yad argues with this. Rashi in the Ksiv Yad says, Kidei she'etzu yirokos b'motzei shvius, four lines on the bottom, he says, v'kosher kein kidei she'etzu b'shvius. Not only can you water them in the seventh year, so you'll be able to have them in the eighth year, you can even water them in the seventh year in order that you'll have them in the seventh year. Since you're doing this for those vegetables, he says you're allowed to go and do this. So you have a big machlokas over here between Rashi in the regular defus that we have and the Rashi Ksiv Yad. Okay, next Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us you're allowed to go and trap, tzodin means to trap, these two types of animals, eso ishus, which we'll see is a chulda, a certain type of a mole or a weasel, the eso achbarim, and mice, you're allowed to go and trap them in the Chol HaMoed and in a Shemitah year, mistei ho'ilan u'mistei alobim, from any type of a field, whether it's a field with trees, an orchard, or whether it's a grain field, mistei alobim, kidarko, in the normal way. The Tanakhama says there is no problem in doing this b'moed u'bashvias, both in Chol HaMoed and in a Shemitah year. You can trap them in the normal ways. Now, trapping them involves various types of digging, and that's the problem that you might have thought, that you're improving the field by doing this to trap the ishus and the achbarim, and therefore you might have thought that it's not permissible. So the Tanakhama tells us, no, you can do this in the regular way. You don't have to do any changes. It's clear that you're doing this to trap these Ishus and Achbarim, and therefore you can do it Kedarko in the Shemitah year and the Chol HaMoed. The Chacham disagree. The Chacham Amrim, Mistei or Ilan from a tree field, that you can do Kedarko. But when Mistei Alavim from a grain field, Shelo Kedarko. You have to do it in a Shinoi Dika way. You have to do it in a not normal way, because doing it in a normal way would look like you're improving the field unnecessarily, a Tirchi Yaseir on Chol HaMoed, or in the Shemitah year that you're working the field. Finally, the mission concludes and says, "Umekarin es hapirtzah b'moed." You're allowed to go and fill in any breaches in your fences on Chol HaMoed. So, if you have a field that has a broken fence, you can fix that even on Chol HaMoed. That's doing it with a shinoi ubashvius bona kedarko. In the Shemitah year, you're allowed to do this in the normal way. You don't have to do it with some sort of a shinoi like you have to do it on Chol HaMoed. And the Gemara in tomorrow's shiur will explain this a little bit more in detail. We'll leave it till then. The Gemara starts off and asks us, what is this Ishus? I told you what an Ishus is. If you look in the last words of the Tosus Dibur Maskul Tzod, and it's an Ishus, he brings down that Ishus Mefurish B'Yerushalmi is Chulda. Chulda is a weasel or a mole. So this Ishus, the Gemara asks, what is it? My Ishus, Amar Yehuda, it's a birya, it's a creature, She'ein Lo Inayim, it doesn't have eyes, it's blind, lives under the ground, doesn't have need for vision, it uses sono, it uses all sorts of other mechanisms in order to go and know what's going on. It doesn't have vision. Amar Rava Bar Yishmael, either Rava Bar Yishmael or Vitema, or was Rabbi Yemer Bar Shalmiya said the following, Mikra, do we have a pasuk that supports that this Ishus is a Bir Yishein Lo Inayim? So he says, yeah, you have a pasuk from Tehillim. The pasuk says, Kemo Shablul, Shablul is a snail, Kemo Shablul, that is Temes, it melts away, and Yaloch, and it goes away. So just like the snail does this, so too, Nefel Eishes Bal Chozu Shomesh. So too, this Eishes, which is the Ishus, that's this creature, it never saw the sun. Bal Chozu Shomesh. So it implies over here that this creature doesn't have eyes, it doesn't see the sun, it doesn't have vision. Okay, that's the allusion in the pasuk. The Brisa says, "Tanu Rabbanon, Sodineso Ishus, V'yeso Achbarim, Mistei Halovan, Mistei Ilon Kedarko." This is the Tanakam's opinion in our Mishnah. The Brisa says that this opinion says you're allowed to go and trap these moles or these weasels or the mice from both the grain field or from a tree field in the normal way on Chol HaMoed and during Shemitah year. And likewise, the Brisa adds, and that's why it's being brought down over here, "Umachrivin Chorei Nemolim." And you're likewise allowed to go and destroy the ants, the nemolim, the chori nemolim, the ant holes. You're allowed to go and destroy them as well. They're gonna ruin your crops, so you're allowed to go and destroy them before they go and eat your crops and ruin your crops. What does it mean? Umachrivim chori nemolim, ketzad machrivim. How do you do this? What are the technical aspects of destroying the ant holes? So the Gemara tells us, Shimon Gamliel tells us, Omer, maybe ofar michur zeh, you bring dirt from another ant hole, but no same is so chor zeh. And you put it into this ant hole. So you take an ant hole from someplace else, you take the dirt from there, and it's going to have ants in it, the Mefarshim explain, and you bring it to this ant hole, and then the ants will have a war. And therefore, the Hein Chonkin says that, because you're bringing in ants from a foreign place, so they're now going to attack the ants that are here, and the ants that are here are going to attack the ants that are invading, and bottom line is, they'll kill each other off, and that's how you get rid of the Chorin of the Nemolim. Rashi explains, Nation may reach an es offer, they smell the dirt, the Ein Makirim Bos Ofer, and they don't recognize this, so they assume it's a foreign dirt. And some of the Farshim explain that there are ants over there to come with them, and therefore they go and fight, or they're suffocated by the other foreign dirt, they're not used to it, and it makes them go away, and that's how you get rid of the problem of the ant holes. Amar Rav Yehemar Bar Shalmiya, we had Rav Yehemar Bar Shalmiya a moment ago, so we have another member from him. So he says, Mishmei De Abaye, he says the name of Abaye, this only works, Hu Dekoy Betray Ivrei Nara. This is only so if the second ant hole that you're bringing, the dirt from there to the first ant hole, is far enough away. It's on the other side of the river, so it's recognized as being foreign. Otherwise, they're buddies, and they're not going to fight with each other. And likewise, even if it's on the other side of the river, it has to be that there's no connection between the two, Hudaleka Gishra. There's no bridge over here that connects them, because if there's a bridge that connects them, so the ants from the new place are going to be familiar with the ants from the old place, and therefore they're not going to fight with each other, and it's not going to be considered foreign dirt, and it won't serve the purpose of chonkin, of causing them to choke each other or to die, because it's foreign dirt. Likewise, Udaleka Gabla. Not only does it have not be a bridge, but even if you have a lesser type of bridge, a Gishros, that's like the Tappan Zee Bridge, that's a major bridge. But even if you have a Gabla, if you have a plank bridge, so that would also be adequate for the ants to get across, and therefore they'll be familiar with each other and they won't be foreign ants. And even if you don't have a real bridge or even a plank bridge, Udaleka Mitzra, and there's not even a rope. A Mitzra is a rope, so it's small enough for the little ants to get across. So therefore, it's not going to be considered foreign. As Rashi says, Adayin Kotami Gamla, this is the rope, the mitzvah, is even less than the Gamla, which was less than the Gishra. And if you don't have any of these, then the ants can't get across. But if you do have a rope, Shikoshim, Chevel Echa, Mishnei, Ivri Hanar, Mishnei Yisedos, you have two posts at each end, and you have a rope there, and that's how you can get across. Ochazin Bo, Ochin, Alosa Geshe, and you have a very, very flimsy bridge over here. It's very narrow and flimsy, but if you have that, the ants can get across, and therefore they're not going to be far into each other, and they won't kill each other out, and they won't be Cholkin, and therefore, if you're not separated, it's not considered significant enough, and it won't cause the ant holes to go away. We turn to Zion and Aleph. The Gemara asks one last question. Ad kama, as Rashi says over here, Meruchokin Hani Trechore Namolim. How far apart do they have to be? The Chi'iko Naro Benayu, that if you have a river between them, the Lekha Gishra, and you don't have any of these other means of crossing it, De Makirin Hani Chore Dahani. How far apart do they have to be? Even with the bridge separating them, Rashi says that they're considered foreign. So the Gemara answers, Ad Parsa. They have to be a Parsa away, 4 mil. 8,000 amos, a mil is 2,000 amma, a paras has four of them, so 8,000 amma, which is roughly, again, about 4 kilometers, each mil is about a kilometer, so that's how far apart they have to be. That's the way Rashi understands this. Eleka parsa benayu, if you don't have a parsa between them, even though you have a river between them, veleka mavra, and there's no passageway from one side to the other, if they're not a parsa away, they're still going to be considered recognizable to each other, and they're not going to have the effect of one killing out the other. That's the way Rashi understands this. In the top Tosos, he brings down the Ein Makirin Ze'ezeh Biyosami Parasa Afilu below Nahar. He says that in the situation they're more than a paras away, even if there's no river, as long as they're just 4 paras away, that's far enough away. So even though they're accessible, but for a paras away is too far away for the ants to travel, and it's considered far away, even if there's no river. Alternatively, Tosos says, Inami Hachi Perusho, this is how they understand this, Kishyesh Nahar, if there's a river, Masai Kruyan Makirin Ad Parsa, that they're still considered recognizable, even if there's a river there, if they're within a Parsa. Abu Biyos, if it's more than a Parsa, then they're called Mikre Ein Makirin, the Dafka Dik Onor, but this is only applicable if there's a bridge, if there's a river between them. If there is no river between them, so then even more than a Parsa, according to the second interpretation, they still would recognize each other. With this, we conclude today's Shir.